Peter Gagg, who drives it through.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Ben's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself and Buster are joined by a Motherwell legend, John Philibin. John, welcome along. It's a pleasure, mate.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Well, what we're going to focus on primarily throughout this episode is John's career at Fir Park and beyond. We'll also go over Saturday's disappointing result against Ross County and look ahead to the weekend's match with Dundee as well. Firstly, John, as I say, welcome along again. You came to Motherwell in 1986 and stayed for 12 years, making over 300 appearances. But there was a kind of major feat that occurred in your career early on when the Scotland under 18 team that you were part of won the European under 19s championship. Not only that, but you scored in the final. Considering you only scored 6 or 7 goals for Motherwell over your time in the 12 years, that's quite a feat.
It was. I was back in 1982, but I was playing with Stirling Albion at the time, obviously. I was a part timer. We played in the under-18 European Championships in Finland, and I don't know, just during that week I'd had a premonition that we'd scored in the final. Well, I'd score in the last minute and a half to give Scotland a 1-0 lead. And as it happened, when we played the day days, it was only 40 minutes each way for the under-18s, and I managed to score in the 39th minute. So it came through, but that's one of the highlights of my goal-scoring efforts, I must say.
It was a hugely talented team, that, wasn't it? I was looking at the other goal-scorers, Pat Nevin getting on the score sheet, Gary Mackay as well.
That's right, I think back then we had a very talented squad. Ali Dick played as well, who was at the time at Tottenham. Unfortunately, he got a bad knee injury. But that squad, I mean, we were depleted before we went to the finals, because we were supposed to have a few players from Aberdeen and Rangers, but unfortunately they were playing in the Scottish Cup final. People like Eric Black, Neil Cooper, Brian Gunn, David McPherson, they were all kind of playing in the Scottish Cup final, so they missed out.
It must be quite incredible to think of a Scottish side doing that well in a major championship, albeit a kind of unders level, but it must be a wee bit disappointing to see that the nation itself, as a footballing nation, hasn't really kicked on and built on that success, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the reason is, because if you look back, there's been a couple of really good sort of under-21 Scotland teams with a lot of talent in them, but when it comes to the full national side, we don't seem to be able to kick on, and I think it's really disappointing this year that the European Championships in France, that Scotland's going to be the only home nation's team that's not going to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. After your time at Stirling and Doncaster, you did join Motherwell in 1986. You'd have been arriving there, a big character, albeit a small man, and Tommy McLean. How big an influence was he in bringing you to Fir Park?
Well, obviously, I'll tell you a true story here. When I was at Doncaster, and the manager Billy Bremer had left, and Dave Cusack was the manager of Doncaster Rovers, and at that time I was playing at fullback, and his assistant manager, the first player he brought in, was a fullback. So my time at Doncaster was getting a bit restricted, and actually picked up a wee bit of an injury. And Dave Cusack came in and says, "Look, there's a team in Scotland who want to sign you." He says, "Take a couple of days off, go up the road, and have a look round, see what you think." So I drove back up to Doncaster, came in, I seen Tommy McLean. He was explaining at the time that he was just in the starting process of trying to build a team to try and take Motherwell further up the league. And he'd be delighted if I came and signed. So I had a wee look round Firth Park, went home, spoke to one or two people who were in the game. John Cahoon, who is still is one of my best pals. Robert Dawson, who again went to, he's one of my best pals, who played at Stirling with me and then went to St Mirren. And I spoke to Alex Smith, and the vibes I was getting from most people are that Motherwell were on the up and up. So after a couple of days up here, and I was getting severe pressure from family, friends, "Look, Motherwell's a good wee side, they're coming up, you want to come up, come back up the road, sign." But honestly, driving through to Firth Park, I was still undecided. And it was only when I go into Reid Tam's office and he sat me down, he says, "Well, what do you think?" And I says, "Well, to be honest, I'm not quite 100% sure." And he says, "Look," he says, "this club's going to go places." He says, "We need a couple of decent defenders, solid decent defenders. I can see you in that mould," and that's what kind of clinched the deal.
You're arriving, as you say, at a time that the club seemed to be wearing an upward slant, and there was a number of big characters around the place at the time. I know, having played at a decent level prior to Motherwell, you wouldn't have been particularly intimidated, but was it a bit of a novel experience coming in and seeing some of the big names and the big faces in them and amongst it?
Well, not really, because with the youth team, I've been playing with people like Eric Black, Paul McStay, and Brian Gunn, Neil Cooper, who'd all been playing first team football. When I moved south to Doncaster, like the manager at the time, Billy Bremner, I mean, the first time I met him, I was a wee bit in awe, because obviously he came from Stirling like me. So when I came into the change room at Firth Park, it was just, and when you first come in, a lot of the players make you feel welcome, and it's, they're all greeting you and making sure that you're okay, and it's not a problem. It's just if you end up doing something daft, like missing a penalty in this semi-final of the Scottish Cup, they're not too happy with you, right enough. But I just blended in with the scenery, to be honest.
You mentioned that semi-final and the disappointment that you suffered in the early stages.
Well, I think I'd only been signed at the club 2 weeks. I think it was only, I signed in September 86, and the Scottish Cup final was kind of mid to late. And we hadn't even practice penalties, to be honest. And it was just at the end of the game, me Charm was going about asking people, do they want to take a penalty? And most of the boys were, no, I'll take the later ones. And then he turned to me and says, "Will you take a penalty?" And I said, "Aye." And then walking up, I said to myself, "Right, I'm just going to make sure I put my foot through the ball," and that was it. A great strike, but unfortunately for me, it's crashed the underside of the bar and stayed out.
How difficult is it to pick yourself up from such a disappointment and such a big stage?
I think being new at the club, and I don't think a lot of, well, I don't like to think a lot of the players kind of blame me for that, but it's just onwards and upwards. You're on to the next game. It's, you can't afford to dwell on Bolly, what might have been.
Just as we moved on, the team continued to push on, and there was a fantastic feeling about that 91 team, right up to beating Rangers in the penultimate game of the season, the fantastic win over Celtic in the semi-final replay. How big was it being a part of that side? I know we'll move on to the final, and I guess that...
Well, 1991 was probably my worst season at Motherwell, because leading up to January, I had only played one game in the first team, and it was the opening game of the season against Dundee United. I think beat 1-0. Then the following week, there was only one change in the side, and it was me. I was dropped. So I went in to see wee Tam on the Monday, just ask for an explanation. I can't hear what he said to me online here. I'd get done for that. But he said if I wasn't happy, he told me he picks the team. If I wasn't happy, I could go elsewhere. So me in the heat of the moment, I said, right, I'm not happy here, I'm not happy, no playing. I put in a transfer request. So for the second week of the season, up until the end of January, when we played Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup, I never featured at all. And even when Luke Nyholt, I think Luke broke his leg in October at Celtic Park, if I remember right, I thought I might have a wee chance of getting back in the squad, but I was never cited. And the funny thing was about that season is, back in the day, when your contract was up, the Bosman rule wasn't in, and the club could retain you if your mass contract was going to be up at the end of that season, and the club could retain you. So unless somebody wanted to buy you and Motherwell wanted to sell you, then Motherwell could retain your contract but no pay you unless you signed. But that season, I played a reserve game kind of mid-January. In fact, it was the week, the midweek before we played Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup up at Pittodrie. And I remember, we 2-1 each or something like that, but I remember going home with my wife and I'm saying, look, I've had enough here. I need to go and find a job. I just cannot take it anymore. I need to get out of this club. I said, it's just dragging me down. And I had a wee spot with Tommy at half-time. And he says, I'll see you in the morning. So I went in the fourth part the next morning and all the squads did the training, the warm-up together. And then when the warm-up's finished, first team go away with the gaffer, young boys in the reserves go away with the youth coaches, and I'm walking away with the youth coaches and wee Tam shouted me over. And I'm going, oh, here we go, and this is it, I'm going to get dogs abuse here. So he's... He says to me, he says, I'm not happy with you. I said, oh, sorry, gaffer. I said, just hate the moment last night when you spoke out to me and I just cracked and said one or two things I shouldn't have said. She says, aye, well, he says, let's forget about that. He says, how are you feeling? I says, oh, I'm feeling all right. She says, no, I want you to know how you're feeling fitness-wise. I says, well, fitness-wise, I says, I feel good. I says, I'm doing my training at Fir Park. I'm going away for the park. I'm doing a wee bit extra. He says, just to keep myself picking over in case anything happens. He says, good. He says, we're playing three centre-backs at Aberdeen on Saturday and you're playing. And that was it. And from that game up until the last game of the season, being the Scottish Cup final, I played in every game apart from the replay at Morton. But like I said, if you look back at the stats of that season, I probably played about 11 first-team games.
It seemed very much almost as if it was written in the stars that team were going to go on and claim glory the semi final. You don't often get two cracks of the whip against Celtic, do you?
I think the semi final, the first game, we were so unlucky in the sense that Fergie's hit the bar for about 30-35 yards with a free kick right near the end of the game. But the start of the second game, the replay, was unbelievable. Celtic pinned us in and they must have had three or four corners and we just couldn't get a foothold in the game. But luckily enough, we went back. We went in the changing room at 2-1 down and it was probably wee Tommy's best ever team talk. Usually we'd come in ranting, shouting and, you know, having a go at everybody. But everybody just sat down. He just looked at us and says, well, you've got 45 minutes. If you want to be in the Scottish Cup final, you need to play a lot better than that. And then he just left it. and then, as you'd say, it's written in the stars. As they say, the rest is history.
The selection process for the final, I know it's something that is kind of mentioned in relation to yourself a lot, and it must be still difficult, but how was the selection process for the final, and how difficult it was?
I thought I had a really good chance of playing, because like I'd played in every round. I think I'd picked up a note for the Morton game, the replay. I remember I was in the stand. I think I'd picked up a note in the first game. But leading up to the last week, I thought I had a good chance of playing. Obviously, Colm O'Neill had picked up a knee injury 2 weeks before the final. But I don't know, it's just to find out the actual ins and outs of the team selection, and you would need to talk to B. Tommy, obviously, because he's the only man who could tell you. But obviously, for me, it was probably one of the worst days of my footballing career, in the sense that I played in every round apart from getting to the final and then missing out in the final. And with a team like Motherwell, it's not very often you're going to get a chance to play in a Scottish Cup final. So that was just a hammer blow.
Just to ask as well, John, in regards to, obviously you know making the team, did you know before that, or was that a case of, you know, that day or day or four?
No, you know, the team was announced on the Saturday morning. We had breakfast, a walk, and then the team was announced at about 11 o'clock. But I kind of knew myself, I had a very strong feeling, because on the Friday night, we're staying at the Holiday Inn in Irvine, and Ross Matthew was down, who's one of we Tam's pals, and I know Ross Matthew for the youth team. And he was like, "Oh, you're looking forward to tomorrow?" I said, "Oh, can't wait, biggest day of my career, blah, blah, blah." And wee Tommy couldn't look me in the eye. And then I knew I was in a bit of trouble, because Colin O'Neill had already been told that he was going to be on the bench. So I'm looking about the rest of the squad, trying to pick the team. And if Colin O'Neill's on the bench, you're looking at Stevie Kirk still being there. And it's going to be a toss-up between me and, I think it was Craig Parson. I think Big CP had either picked up an injury or he hadn't played the last couple of games. So that time, on the Friday night, I was sharing with Joe McLeod, and I said, "Oh, I've got a bad feeling about tomorrow." And he said, "Nah, you'll be all right, big man, you'll be all right." But when the team got announced, it was first 11, and then he'd named the two subs at Hampden. But looking about the changing room, looking about the meeting room, you knew Colin O'Neill was already on the bench, because he was telling everybody. And then you looked at who else was there. It was Stevie Kirk, wee Joe, Nick Cusack, myself, Jamie Dolan, you know what I mean? And he's not going to leave out Stevie Kirk after his exploits during the cup run. Yeah.
Just on the game itself, I personally, after getting over the disappointment or dealing with the disappointment, how hard was it to watch on from the stands? And
to be honest, for the team getting announced to actually get to Hampden was a bit of a blur for me. I remember coming out of the team meeting, I phoned my wife, Susan, who was going to Fir Park to meet all the rest of the wives and girlfriends to come to the game, and I told Susan, I said, "Look, phone my mum and dad, phone my family, tell them I'm not playing." I says, "Lewis is like, I'll not be on the bench. If they want to come to the game, that's fine. If they don't, that's whatever. They can do what they want." But I just knew then I wasn't going to be involved. Then the other thing that I remember for the cup final is I went out to meet Susan in the car park when the bus with all the wives and girlfriends arrived. So I wearing my blazer, told her, just totally, obviously, disappointed, gutted. Couldn't believe it. And then I was coming back in, and the wee concierge goes, "You got a ticket?" I said, "Sorry." He says, "You got a ticket?" I says, "No, I don't need a ticket. I'm with Motherwell, I'm with the cup final squad." She says, "Oh, if you're not getting a ticket, you're not getting in. And obviously, you'll know how I'm feeling." And this wee boy in this wee hat Honestly, if old Dickie didn't turn up, I think I'd have put him through the door. And old Dickie's like, no, he's with the cup final squad. And he's like, well, he's not got a ticket. He says, well, he doesn't need a ticket, he's a player. So while Bill Dickie's talking to him, I've just passed him and went in the door. And all the players are getting ready, obviously, so the boys who wanted to play moving all went out, got a cup of tea, went up the stand. And it's one of them where you're sitting in the stand, and to be honest, I'm sitting there saying, do I want Motherwell to win? Do I want them to win, or do I want Dundee and Eddie to win? And when Phil O'Donnell scored the first goal, his mum was sitting in front of me, and his mum got up in tears and walked out, and that kind of brought me back to my senses, and then I started supporting the boys. But it was hard to take. It was one of them where it's, you're sitting there, you've not had a really great season, you've only really started playing since January, you've managed to help get the team to a cup final, and then in the last gasp it's been snatched away from you.
The Scottish Cup final obviously brought the European football the following season, and again after winning the cup, the club unfortunately weren't really able to kick on for a couple of seasons after that. What firstly was the experience like of playing the Polish side Katowice in Europe? Obviously representing the club in Europe for the first time.
One of the abiding memories of that first trip to Poland was the hotel we were staying in. Oh my God. I think there was a nightclub and a ladies of ill repute, shall I say, place doing the ball. And the smell was unbelievable. And all the Motherwell fans would have no names. All the old fans who travel, I think they were highly delighted we were in this hotel. But the game itself, it was a wee bit of an eye-opener because we were used to playing at 100 miles an hour, and the Polish side just wanted to keep the ball and just knock it about and try and entice us out. And I would say we were a bit unfortunate. We should have probably did better against Katowice.
I suppose then in the second leg, the team did make up for the first leg disappointment. It was just all down to that away goal and being a little too late.
Look, I think that first venture into Europe, I think a lot of the players kind of learned a bit of, you know, it's not just all gung-ho, we just kind of go charging forward, we've got to be patient, keep the ball. And I think when the best trip in Europe was when we played Dortmund. And that's probably, as in a Motherwell jersey, I think that's the finest 45 minutes that I've ever seen or played in for the first half of that game against Borussia Dortmund.
Well, I was actually going to go on to that after me saying about the perhaps slightly disappointing seasons following the cup win. Tommy McLean began to change things, didn't he?
After the cup, Tommy, I think, went about building a really good side. Leading up to, and I don't know why he left or what the ins and outs of him leaving, but the side he left for Alex McLeish to come in and take over was an exceptional side. We finished up under Tommy McLean in season 93-94, I think it was, and I think he spent at least 2-3 seasons building that team, adding one or two players every season and just making it a better side. For when Alex McLeish came in, the first thing Alex McLeish said to us, he says, we know you're a good side, we just want you to go and play. And I think that's the difference between him and Tommy McLean. Tommy was always wanting to have a good defensive unit that didn't give away a lot of goals, but the players that he'd assembled was a great attacking unit. I mean, for me, that season, 94-95, when Big McLeish took over, Big Alec took over, it was just unbelievable. You just couldn't get enough. Training-wise, the boys were desperate to go in. Everybody stayed late. There were nae arguments, nae disagreements, and everybody just wanted to play. And if a team scored one, we'd score two. If they scored two, we'd score three. I think also, going back to that season, I think we lost the first game of the season against Rangers at Ibrox, and we'd played for an hour with 10 men because Rab Shannon had been sent off in about the 30 minute mark, and there was 1-1. We got a corner in the last minute and Big Alex shouting everybody forward, and then the corner got played into the box, it broke out of Brian Loudrop at the edge of the box, he's ran the full length of the pitch, slipped into Big Dung Ferguson, and he's bobbled down at the bottom corner, and we got beat 2-1. But from there, I think to the winter break in December, we were unbeaten. And that season is probably the best season. For me, it's been the best Motherwell team I've played in the 12 years. And I think if you ask most of the fans, if they take away the cup final kind of sentimentality, where obviously Motherwell winning the cup was great, but if they're honest with themselves, they'll say that's the best team that probably Motherwell's had for a long time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And looking back at that side as well, very rarely, I think quite a few Motherwell players that we've spoken to from the past, guys like Rob McKinnon, Brian Martin, who received Scotland caps, say that they felt that they believed that at times Motherwell players, and Fir Park in particular, was a place where guys were perhaps overlooked for the national setup.
Well, without a doubt, if you look at Paul Lambert's a classic case. Paul Lambert, and probably Rob as well, because like they had to move to get into the Scotland team. The minute Paul Lambert went to Borussia Dortmund, he got capped. Yep. Now, he should have been capped when he was playing with Motherwell. Big buff as well, but I don't know how he didn't get a game long before he got a game. Big Chris as well. Big Chris was on the fringes a few times. You know, I mean, for me, that season just typified what Tommy had built, and Alex McLeish had just took off the shackles and said, go and play. And it was fully a team of players who all wanted to play football in the right manner. Get the ball, short passes, pass and move, pass and move. I mean, I think as well, for the first game of the season up until the winter break, the team picked itself. I don't think we picked up any injuries or suspensions. I think the first person to go out of the team was Jamie Dolan through suspension, and that was near enough at December. And Jamie didn't get the credit that he deserved because he was a major part of that team. He allowed people like Paul Lambert, Billy Davis, even your two wing-backs to go forward. He would just go and win us the ball and keep it simple. But he was a good football player as well, as just people thought he was a hard man, but he was a lot more than that.
You talked about Tommy McLean leaving the club and then McLeish coming in. As an inexperienced manager, he didn't seem to have any problems in putting his own stamp on the team. I know there was a couple of perhaps viewed as bizarre signings, but he really had great success on the park. Mm-hmm. How was the transition for the more experienced guys like yourself, a relatively inexperienced manager coming in?
Well, to be honest, he didn't tinker too much for the team. And I think the players respected him in the sense that he was a Scottish international. It was his first job. Plus also, what you've got to remember is we're all professional football players. We are there to win games. We're all there to play for the bonus, to earn for our families. So if you're not going to be in that team, you're not going to get a chance to earn the bonus. So when Big Alec came in and says, look, I think he did brilliant in the first sense. He didn't try to change anything. He says, we know you're a good team. They've obviously seen us for, well, he was still playing against us for Aberdeen. He always obviously knew that we were going to be a good team. But he just says, go and play. And that was it. It was as if somebody took the shackles off you, and then for there, we just started flowing. Just everybody wanted the ball. There was nobody hiding, and everybody worked for each other. And I think, like I said earlier, I think, in my opinion, for my 12 years at Fir Park, that was the best team I played. And, I mean, we had players like Tommy Coyne and Dougie Arnott, who, honestly, as a partnership, as a defender in training, I hated playing against. If somebody asked me, who was the worst player you played against? It would be Dougie Arnott. Because he never gave you a minute. He trained the way he played. He gave 100% at all times. And having somebody like that in your team, and with Tommy Coyne's guile and ability, I mean, as a defender, we'd look up, just play a ball to Tommy Coyne. You know, he'd hold it up and link the play, or you'd play any midfield to beat Billy Davis, Paul Lambert, or you've got two wing backs who were like two wingers going up and doing that line. It was a joy.
The following on, when McLeish then began to open the checkbook, some perhaps substandard players brought the start of a bit of a decline, didn't they?
What I would describe him as, he brought players in to replace players who left, who weren't as good, didn't have as good as quality. Not because every player gives their all, but you know, it's one of them where the player that they're replacing, they're not quite up to the mark.
Can I ask John as well, in regards to, again, somebody that McLeish brought in, Eddie Mee, when he played with Falkirk, as far as I remember, I was only a young laddie, but as far as I remember, you know, he was a goal scoring midfielder. And he seemed to go into your team at right back, was, you know, where did that come from?
I don't know, to be honest. I think possibly at the time when he signed Eddie Mee, we still had a few good midfield players and they couldn't get a game in the middle of the park. So he had, because he signed him, he said to maybe find a position for him.
Was there questions from the guys in the changing room though, as they saw Paul McGrillan and Stevie Kirk go one way and Eddie Mee coming in, or seeing the repeated transfer fee for guys like John Hendry?
We thought at the time that it was strange for us to lose two strikers and then bring in like a midfield player.
Mm-hmm.
I think it came as a shock for Turkey to leave because, like, obviously he was a cult hero. He was the fans' favourite. But again, Paul McGrillan is another one who scored a lot of good goals for Motherwell. It's tragic what's happened to him, but at that time, like I say, I think it goes back to the point where the people he was bringing in weren't up to the standard of the people that were already there. And I think what might have happened was a lot of people were still calling it a wee Tam's team. And I think he wanted to put his mark on it by bringing in maybe 3, 4, 5 different players to replace the players that wee Tam had brought through. And I think that might have been his downfall, because we went from second in the league, finishing, playing against Borussia Dortmund, finishing second in the league, to the next season, we almost got relegated.
I think you're right there, sorry, as you say, you know, it does seem as if he wanted to put his own sort of stamp on the team.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it just went from, as you say, one end of the table to the other.
I think, in one sense, as a manager, you want to do that. You don't want to be constantly people saying to you, "All right, you never built that team. It was Tommy McLean who built that team." So you want to say, "Right, well, I'll show them. And I'll bring in my players and get rid of this player, get rid of that player, and see what happens." But unfortunately for Big Alec, what he did was he replaced, and I wouldn't say substandard, but I said players who weren't of the same quality as the players he was letting go.
I suppose his hand was forced to a certain extent as well, wasn't it, with the introduction of the Bosman ruling, which basically decimated.
Well, I think he got caught out a wee bit with that. It'd be Robin Paul Lambert. I think the way that I read it is, it was going to be at least another season. So I think he thought that unless somebody were going to come in and buy the A2, then they would probably re-sign for Motherwell. But then, all of a sudden, the Bosman ruling has been approved, freedom of contract, Rob's went to Enschede, and Vince has ended up at Borussia Dortmund. So, there were those two players in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, two big players at that.
Especially Rob McKinnon, who could open his, who could use his left foot to open a tin of beans. As the Big Alec says, "Oh, what a left peg you've got. You could open a tin of beans with that."
After the Mitchell van der Gag free kick and the great escape against Dunfermline that day to avoid the playoff.
Which was a great thing for me, because I'd booked a golf holiday. If we'd have been in that playoff, my golf holiday was up there.
I think, to be honest with you, that happened to one of the players last year, no? Irwin, you know, he had to go to Vegas a couple of days after his pals because we were in the playoff last year.
Actually, that surprises me. What's happened this year as well is because, like, watching the two playoff games, or Motherwell were a wee bit nervy up until they scored, but when they, after they scored, the football they played and the pace they played with, they wiped Rangers out. Now, I know that, like, there was, especially at first part, there was a couple of deflections and that, but once Motherwell scored, they were a totally different team. And I'd have thought, for getting two results like that, beating them away and then beating them at home, that'd have gave them the incentive to go and kick on this season. But it just didn't happen.
I guess to a certain extent it has been, there's been spells when it's been better this season, but and after McGee came in, the results started to pick up a bit as well, but we have kind of went backwards again in the last couple of weeks, so we need to kind of address that.
Especially when you're playing around the teams around about your area that you want to be picking points up against them.
This is the first podcast that I thought we might not actually discuss the Rangers game. we devote about 10 minutes every week to it, just to remind everyone what the score was.
Well, like I said, I watched the games there, and the first 15-20 minutes, both games, a similar pattern. Rangers looked as though they were comfortable on top, couldn't score. But the minute Motherwell scored, it just gave them such a lift, and then they started playing with pace and power. And honestly, I just thought this season, well, they've learned their lesson, they're going to kick on. And that was like a wee bit when we go back to the relegation dogfight we had against Falkirk. What season was that? Was that
92-93?
Where Falkirk beat Hearts 6-0, second last game of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they came to fourth place in the last game of the season, and whoever won that game stayed up, and whoever lost it would be. We time was brilliant with us during that week, because all week we had Falkirk players, and especially an ex Motherwell player, Fraser Wisher, who were in the press saying, "Oh, we beat Hearts easy 6-0, we're going to do the same fourth part to Motherwell." And we time had says, "Right, nobody's talking to the press, we're going to do our talk on the pitch." And then we went out of that game, and I think for the first 15-20 minutes, we actually pummeled them. And I think the game finished 4-2. And Falkirk got relegated, me stayed up. But then after that, we kicked on again, because I think that gave us a massive lift.
Going into the Dunfermline game that season and having fallen behind, did it feel like the writing was on the wall? Did you foresee Big Mitch being able to produce that?
To be honest, I think, as a player, you're always, when you get into a game, you should always think you're going to win. And I think there was a slight trepidation that day, I would say, because, like, it was such a massive game, eh? And I think I was on the bench again. I think I was sitting on the bench. And then it was one of them, you're just getting that sinking feeling, and you think, this is it, we're away. And then Big Mitch steps up, and what a strike.
Is it more relief than anything else?
I think so, because, to be fair, the league's won over the full season, and relegation's the same. It's over the full season, and you've got to do it. There's no point in, you know, having a playing bad all season, and then you put a run of games near the end of the season where you get four or five games and you survive relegation by the skin of your teeth, and then for all these importances, you think, oh, we've had a great season, we've stayed up. No, we've struggled all season. We've managed to put two or three results together, and we've managed just to get out a big hole. And it should be taking over the full season. And to be honest, there's probably, the early seasons I played, probably one or two of them we might have deserved to win.
I think that seemed the same from the fans' point of view. After last season, there was the jubilation of beating, particularly given who the opposition was, but
even more.
And considering how many times you look back over the years and the decisions that went against you, you talk about that game in 1995 with. with Duncan Ferguson at 94-95. And I think it came in about the 97th minute as well. It's just, they talk about the Fergie time. Well, they've had some amount of injury time to end up screwing us over in the past. So I think there was a fair degree of that. But I'd like to look at your last season, and particularly the arrival of Harry Campman after McLeish left for Hibs. It's still regarded as one of the most bizarre managerial appointments in the club's history, possibly is the most bizarre appointment. He didn't have...
My abiding memory of Harry Campman is pre-season training, and we were at Dale Park, and like I said, normally everybody does a warm-up together, and then the first team split and go away with the manager, and it just so happened that me and Dougie Arnott were at the opposite end from where most of the squad were warming up. So when everybody got to shout, me and Dougie started running down towards the first team squad. And we got halfway down, and Harry Campman turned round and started walking towards us. And I went, aye, Dougie, what's happening here? So he's turned round and he's went, you, away. And I'm saying, me? And I went, aye. And Dougie's going, me? And Harry Campman's going, aye. So me and Dougie both go sent away. I'm like, what's happening here? Does he not know who we are? In the sense that we're first team players. We're no youth team or reserve team players. And it's pre-season. And it's just like as if we were schoolboys. And like, away you go. So I'm looking at Dougie, he's looking at me, and I said, well, we better go. And that was it. And I think then I knew the writing was on the wall.
There was just an incredible amount of players that he readied the club of, and that's said. And
again, it's
so many experienced fan favourites.
Want to put his mark on the club. I mean, that part of my Motherwell career is just a bit of a blank. I think the only thing that did well for me was the last game of the season against Aberdeen, when I was on the bench. And he put me on about 15, 20 minutes to go, knowing that by that time I was already leaving.
It seemed like there was plenty of guys. Like, I know Dougie was released, Brian Martin was released, yourself, Tommy Coyne, I'm pretty sure he was offered a deal but left. Do you think that was on the basis that so many of his teammates who he'd achieved such great success with were on their way out, and it was a kind of changing of the guard, so to speak?
I think so. What you've got to remember as well, we were probably all coming up to our mid-30s at that time as well. So Tommy, I mean, I think Tommy Coyne could have probably played another couple of seasons, easy.
Yeah.
Big Buff came with me to Stirling Albion. And I think Dougie just retired. Did Dougie not just retire after that as well?
Yeah, Dougie retired after his release, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's been a few old firm players who were delighted to see Dougie Arnott go, I'll tell you that. I actually tried to get Dougie to come to Stirling as well. Because when I went into Stirling, I had something like 7-8 players myself. And it was a matter of trying to pick up players here, there and everywhere. And Big Buff came, Davey McCallum, he came, Gary Gow, the reserve goalkeeper. And they all did well for me at Stirling. Davey Bell, John Hendry, although he was injured a wee bit, but he came as well.
The testimonial occurred after your release, didn't it? It was the pre-season for the following season.
I've only one regret about my testimonial. They never put my name on a jersey. It was the first season I had names on jersey, and they just gave me the number 19, and they took me off after half an hour. I was having one of my better games. it was a great day for me and my family. I really enjoyed it. I never thought I'd be back at Firth Park, but as the dice got rolled in the Scottish Cup when I was manager of the Albion, and they managed to beat Hibs in the Scottish Cup, and the winner went to Firth Park. And it was a great story of that, because the first gate Hibs, who were getting managed by Alec McLeish at this time, were on an unbeaten 20 match run. And we went to Easter Road and drew one each. And actually, Stephen Nicholas, who later came to Motherwell, had a great chance to win the first leg. So anyway, the replay was 2 weeks later, about 10 days later on the Tuesday night, and asked George Peebles, who was the assistant manager still in Albion as a player, to go and watch Hibs and do a match report. So they played Airdrie and at New Broomfield, and they went and they pumped them 4-0. So I went round to see wee Peebs on the Sunday night. And I said, I've chapped the door, his wife's let me in. I walked through the room and me Peebs is sitting there with his stuff lying out. And he said to me, his first words to us, and he says, what a team. What a team. How could you go with them? Oh, wait, Peebs, wait a minute. I says, I'm no interested in what team is it. Tell me how we beat them. And so for the next sort of hour and a half, 2 hours, we went over our kind of game plan that we were going to do at Fourth Bank to beat Hibs. And the funny thing was, the winners got Motherwell at Fir Park. Now, obviously, there was interest for both camps because Alex McLeish being the ex-manager, me, Brian Martin, Gary Gow, David McCallum, all ex-Motherwell players. And I also remember the talk in the press was Hibs going to Fir Park in the next round of the Cup to test herself against a Premier League team. And then me going to beat them at 2-1 at Fourth Bank. And Big Alec came in after the game and he said, his first words to me, he says, you, ya big jammy, be you. But he took it in good spirit. But that was a great night for the Albion. But we came to Fir Park, we put up a great show. And Andy Gorham had a couple of great saves that stopped us from taking the lead. I think we ended up getting beat 2-0. But we had a great week. But that was a great day out as well, because all the family was there and got a great reception for the fans. That was a great day.
You talk about, you thought you would perhaps never be back at Motherwell, obviously following your time at Albion, you returned as a coach and also got the chance to test yourself as a manager, only for a brief spell.
Well, the disappointing thing about that was I was a bit naive in the sense that when me Billy go to sack, Pat Nevin came in and said to me and Meal, we want you to take care of the team for the next 4 games. And in between that spell, we won two games, we lost a cup game to Airdrie, and then our final game lost to Celtic. I think it was either a Friday night or a Saturday night live on Sky. But in between times, for taking over to the Celtic game, Pat Nevin had kept saying to me, well, Lucy, you're doing well. We beat Hearts, we beat St Johnson, we got 6 points. He says, look, there's a great chance, you're on the list. But he never actually spoke to me and says, well, what would you want sort of salary, or what would you want for players? And I just believed that I was in with a chance for the job. But in all honesty, looking back, there was no chance I was getting the job, because I think more or less the deal was done for Eric Black and Terry Butcher, and as soon as they were available to take over the reins, I got the bump. And as I say in football, that's that, yeah.
So do you not feel that you were ever really given proper consideration for the job?
No,
despite...
I don't think so, no. I think Pat Nevin was just using me just until he got the people he wanted in place. And probably the 2 results, looking back at that season, maybe did a lot to keep Motherwell up that season. When we went to, when we beat Hearts at Fir Park, and then we went up to McDermott and beat them up there as well.
Having already left in a slightly sour note with Harry in charge, and then coming back to have another chance and then to be kind of let down and disappointed again, must have been a real kick.
But that's football, eh? That's, you know, like, managers move, clubs stay, but managers move on. And managers, coaches, and when a new manager comes in, he always brings in his own people, because he wants people around him he can trust. And that's what happened when Eric Black came in. He brought in Terry Butcher, he brought in Chris McCart, who was a big part of the club, and well, unfortunately for them, they win in the admin, but that's what happens in football.
Well, you're not the first to ever go a wee pat either, to be fair, on this programme.
I'm not going to say anything that I wouldn't like to say
about
me, but anyway.
I'll just finish before we end of giving your opinion in sports scene then.
What's an area? Can you tell me what an area is? I thought it was an area. I thought area was spelled with an A and not an E. Guys, just put that ball into a great area for a striker.
just to ask you an odd, John. My big mate Davey mentioned to me the other day when he was first met him in the street, was telling me, and as well, just before you came on, I was watching a game where he scored against Partick Thistle in 1994. Oh. Before that though, Big Seeb had made a decent wee save, and then somebody followed it in and they missed. But the Seeb came out and had a go at you. At that point, the two of you were sort of pushed away from each other. My big mate has told me a million times, there's rumours that you and Big Seeb were having a go at each other, fists and everything, in a pre-season friendly once. Is that true?
No, I think I'd remember if it was fisticuffs. Like, I had a few Barneys with him. I remember one, I can't remember so much that one against Partick, but I remember one at Ibrox where there's been a ball in at the box and he shouted for it. So I'm trying to block Ali McCoy's and he's let the ball bounce. And as the ball's bounced, Ali McCoy's has kind of wriggled past me and Sheeps came out at the last minute and grabbed it off his head. And I'm like, hey, you big, come out and take that before it bounces. He's like, oh, softy, shut up, and push me. I'm standing there looking at him, and I'm saying, ready? Oh. Then I say, oh, wait a minute, he's 6'6", he's built like a brick. All right, see. Now, me and Steve, on the park, we would have a wee shout at each other, but off the park, we were brand new. Yeah? Great big guy. He's my Facebook friend.
Aye, we spoke to him a couple of months ago, and as you say, he's a great guy, but as I say, my big mate, Davey, he kept telling me that when I was speaking to him, so I think he wanted to ask. I don't know, to be honest with you, I can't remind it myself, but he was the one who was telling me, you know, he'd heard all these rumours the two of were throwing punches and stuff, so I felt I had to ask just to straighten his face and all.
I tell you one thing, if he threw a punch at me, they landed. I love Big C. He was a great guy. What a goalkeeper. By the way, and no disrespect to Stevie Woods, who, when he came in and took care of Steve, did a great job for us. But, in my opinion, if Big C had stayed, we'd have won the league.
Aye.
We'd have won the league. Because we were used to, as a defence, see every time a ball came into the box, all you heard was, keeper! And if you didn't get out of the way, he would knock you out of the way.
Aye, you're 15 years out, I know.
Oh, 18 years. I mean, he gave me more heart attacks than anybody when he came out that box and he started dribbling. Oh, I don't think he ever lost a goal, though, coming out and dribbling. He loved to dribble, the big man.
We do a wee thing with the Remember Well charity who work with people unfortunate enough to be living with dementia. And we've actually asked this week for the favourite John Philbin Motherwell moment, and we've had some amount of them as well, I must say. And one of the first ones.
OGs in there. My name, do you know I was called John Philbin Og for a couple of weeks? I actually go put in the programme as John Sullivan. So you better add about another three or four appearances to my toll, because there was a John Sullivan playing for Motherwell. He was in the programme.
The first one that's jumped out at me is Big Softy and Seeb squaring up at Perth one night, or him owning the 10 and 6s with his Thunderbolts.
I love the tennis. I've got a good story about the 10 and 6s. Obviously, you played in the Saturday with the first team, you played in the qualifying rounds of the 10 and 6s on Sunday, and then if you go through the finals, you played on the finals on the Monday night. So we'd go through the final. I think Hearts beat us in the final. Was it Hearts or Aberdeen? We go through the final, we go beat anyway. So I come back home, Stirling, 12 o'clock, and I say to my wife, I says, who is overdue with her first child? And I say to her, look, Susan, I says, please, whatever you do, don't go the night. I am shattered. So I get a wee nudge in the back about 4:30 in the morning. I says, Joe, I said, oh, I think you started. She says, oh, you started? Oh, how long was the contractions? Oh, every couple of minutes. I said, oh my God, how long has this been happening? She says, 4 hours. I was feared to wake you. So she's lying there for 4 hours having contractions and she's not woke me because I'm saying I'm sharp. Luckily, the hospital was just round the corner and the first daughter, Sarah, was born. Right, anyway, that's the fight we see. The 10 and 6 is for Jock Brown. Reminded everybody I had that. Had the shot in Scottish football. I loved the 60s.
Did you play in the Sky Masters as well?
No. I think the first time they played the Scottish Masters, I got a phone call asking if I would play, but I was on holiday in Florida. I'd arrived back on the Monday, and the Masters was on Sunday.
That was brilliant, Ed. Big Buff and Jamie Dolan owned it. They qualified for the final at Manchester.
That's right.
And lost 3-2 to Man United, but it was a good team, that. Manchester, yeah.
No, is that because I wasn't in that team?
Oh, no. We don't bring people on to insult them. Next one we've got, last minute equaliser, Scottish Cup 94.
Oh, that's a great memory. A great wee story as well, because Jim McCluskey was the referee and we got a free, we're getting beat 2. That was a great game. And to be fair, Craig Brewster scored 2 great goals. And that was like Guido van der Kamp saved Tommy Coyne's penalty.
But
2 minutes to go, and I said to Jim McCluskey, we got a free kick at the edge of the box, the halfway line. I said, Jim, how long to go? He says, there'll only be a minute, 30 seconds to a minute. So I played the free kick forward, and we've got a free kick at the edge of the box. And then I went up, had a shot, it's got deflected, and it's went for the corner. So next thing, Rob McKinnon plays the ball in, comes in, big buff, bangs into Guido van der Kamp, it's fun, and it's one of them where it's like it's in slow motion, because I've just kind of spun and it's coming onto my left foot, and I'm saying, just hit this straight, and bang, into the back of the net. So the game finishes 2-2, I get interviewed after the game on the telly, and I says, oh, great result, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I says, you know one thing, I says, I'm surprised we actually go that long in the game. He says, how? I said, well, Jim McCluskey told me there was only 30 seconds to go, and he played an extra 2 minutes. And the next time he played against me, he says, see you. He says, I'm going to so much trouble for that.
The one from Ian Mulvey said, just say thanks to John. He contributed everything for the jersey when he was called upon. Absolute top man.
Well, that's nice, because I would like to think that the Motherwell fans know that every time I stepped in the park, it was 100%, regardless, eh?
Well, there's another one that you'll like here then. So, fantastic, one of my all-time Motherwell favourites. The very definition of a club stalwart. Gave MFC more years than we deserved from him.
That's probably true, because like, there was a couple of times I was on the list and there was a few clubs came in for me, but for some reason, me town wouldn't sell me.
Lawrence Donohan.
Oh, that empty box.
Ask him about his crap golf swing.
Aye, I've seen that. Lawrence Donohan, do you know Lawrence Donohan at all?
We were by the minute sports Motherwell page prior to going by ourselves, but Lawrence helped us out when we first started. So
he went to the same school as me. He's one of my golfing buddies, eh? he's been a journalist, a caddy on the European tour with Ross Drummond. He's wrote a couple of books. He's a great big guy, but you see that comment. I tell him, see the next time you talk to him, tell him that crap swinging off to beat his.
I'm actually, there's more submitted via Facebook, but unfortunately at this moment in time I'm struggling to... See, this is normally Jay's part of the podcast, and I've been thrown under the bus. I don't know if you can actually view any of them just now, Buster, to just go over the final few.
I have a look there, but my phone sort of popped up there, so I dropped in and out there just at that last second, sorry.
It's quite, we'll move on and we'll talk about Saturday's game against Ross County, a 2-1 defeat. Buster, in a game that we knew was very, very important, to suffer a defeat and after passing up so many chances was very disappointing.
I think that's right. We lost a very bad goal. Other than that, the first half, I thought that we were absolutely brilliant at times. That some of the passing was great. You know, just a matter of the, you know, sort of final ball and the strikers getting on the end of it. But in the second half, to be fair to Ross County, they came out and did exactly what they needed to do. They were giving us far too much time in the ball in the first half. In the second half, they were quick to close us down, and we just couldn't settle.
I suppose the upshot of it is now is we're very much back in the battle to avoid that playoff, given a good result for Hamilton at the weekend, albeit they only got a point, but the gap between the teams is very slim. Dundee United picking up a very impressive win over Kilmarnock, meaning that they'll maybe have a wee bit of belief too now. It's getting rather interesting.
I think I'm maybe one of the only people who haven't really got ahead of themselves, to be fair. I never really said much about us, you know, when we were winning the games. It was good to go on that run, but I never really thought we were, you know, we never really pulled away. We never really got away from them. You know, there's still 5-6 teams in there on a tight number of points, so quite a lot of points to be between now and the end of the season. You know, you never know. We could end up 5 places up the league, a couple of places down. It's one of the things where, I've said it a million times on here, in this league everybody's just about as good as each other. It just depends on who turns up on the day.
And just a quick one on Saturday, the trip to Dens Park, if it's on, they seem to have done some sort of James McFadden hair transplant on their pitch to try and get the Scottish Cup tie on. They beat Falkirk 3-1 tonight. If it does go ahead, a very big game, and they just keep on coming just now with the Partick Thistle rearranged fixture the following Tuesday too.
Well, that's what John was saying earlier as well. You know, these teams are all in about us. We've got to pick up points against them. As you says, the picture of that park you showed me earlier was shocking. It was just as if they'd went into B&Q and just rolled out a big bit of green grass on, you know, where the grass used to be. I think, to be fair, it was an insult to Faddy's hair transplant, because his hair's looking cracking, to be honest with you.
Chris Boyd's got some barnet these days as well. It's incredible.
The only one that seems to have went wrong is Lee Griffiths.
He needs to speak to someone about that, he certainly. John, do you get the opportunity to see much of the team these days? I know you're very busy.
I can't get to any live games because on a Saturday I do stats for Opta. See the stats people?
Yep.
I cover games up here and I cover Stirling, Albion, East Stirling and Stenismuir. So on a Saturday, most Saturdays I'm at a game, but it's in the lower divisions.
You'll be hopefully anticipating seeing some of your old teammates for the 25th anniversary of the cup final and the cup win.
When's that?
I believe the club are currently in the planning stages of some events. They had talked about it at the start of the year. I don't know if anything, maybe Buston was...
Well, looks like I'm missing doing that one as well, eh?
I was going to say, we'll make sure.
You know one thing about the cup final? Really disappointed me is see the portrait they done after it?
Yeah.
In the cup final squad. And at the bottom of that portrait, they added 2 players. You know the picture I'm talking about?
I think I've seen it last. I've not seen it in a while, but I know what you're talking about.
It's the one where, see the cup final team are at Hampden and got their portraits, and then underneath them, and neither suspect to these two players who were great players for the club, but they weren't at the club at the time, was Tommy Coyne and Brian Martin.
Oh yeah, I know which one you mean now. It's on the side of the stand, isn't it? As well.
Am I in that picture?
I would need to try and find it.
No, the answer is no. That's what disappointed me.
That does seem very strange and poor.
Do you know what picture I'm talking about?
Yep, I know exactly. The one with Belladonna as well.
Tommy Coyne, a lot big buff. But they weren't there when we won that Scottish Cup. How am I knowing that picture? And that's your homework for the next time I talk to you. Find out how I'm knowing that picture.
I'm no much of a drawer, I must say, so I couldn't just add you in the next time I see it.
I've annoyed the club on Twitter until they invite you to this 91 Cup final party.
No, I'll miss that, that's alright. Go back to the 91 Cup final. When we go back to Firth Park, and obviously everybody's ecstatic, which it was great for them, mate. That's one of the first times I'd actually go really drunk. And the only thing that really got me through that as well was my wife started telling everybody she was 12 weeks pregnant with her first daughter again. So that night, it should have been a double celebration. It should have been me going home with a nice cup winner's medal and then telling everybody I was going to be a daddy.
Nice.
Well, I only told them I was
going
to be a daddy.
John, I'd like to thank you again for giving up so much of your time here. It's been really interesting.
How much is it, by the way? That's 25 quid, you owe me.
We'll negotiate that later, right?
No, that's what I charge for.
We pay in ginger bottles, so by the time we get them shipped up to you, you might not be able to cash them in.
Oh, that's too late. They've just stopped in ginger bottles,
isn't it? Well, right.
Come on.
We'll see if there's anyone looking to pass the test, the best chance you're going to have is with John Philibin's driving school.
It's going to David McCallum. Well, he stopped doing that there, I think. David used to be a driving instructor.
That's for today, John. Get yourself a wee plug in here for your end up your way.
Oh, can I? I'm chock a block. If anybody's going to listen to me, it's 5 weeks up the road.
Ah, well then. Let's share that you say you're busy then.
You had us worried for a stay today.
It was awfully nice of you. You can put it out in there, but just tell them that there's a 5 week wait list.
No, absolutely. Thanks very much, Bill, mate. It's been really interesting. And
I've enjoyed it myself. Okay,
it's been a pleasure, mate.
Okay, nice talking to you too. All the best for the rest of the season.
Cheers, John. Take care.
Thank you.
Right, thanks.
Bye. Buster, thanks very much, mate.
I'm not bothering me. I was, as you say, I'm always very quiet in these ones anyway. But it's been a pleasure to listen to the Big Softy. It's, you know, it's not something I've heard much in the past, so it was nice to hear.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye. TV through my SLC TV, I was back.
just around. So we go to all the different grandchildren who live far away on the back of a big bus, all the way to Bombay.